Hi. Before we begin this episode of Zeugma, we wanted to offer a quick word of caution to our listeners. Because of a discussion of a 2012 controversy surrounding a Reddit user named Violent Acres, as well as the sexist, racist, homophobic, and classist tropes that are commonplace in many internet trolling practices, today's episode contains explicit references to and conversations about offensive subject matter, language, and behaviors. We wanted to let listeners know that these do not reflect the views of our team, and so that you can make an informed decision about listening. Thanks, and here's our episode on trolling. Hi, this is Eric Detweiler, and welcome to this week's episode of Zeugma. I'd like to start out this week's episode with a quick study in contrasting sounds. First, consider the following. That's a clip from a scene of the 2010 Norwegian found footage film Troll Hunter. More specifically, that racket was a group of amateur filmmakers and the movie's titular Troll Hunter getting chased by a troll. The troll in this case is a huge distorted creature with three heads, a lumbering sideways gait, about 30 feet tall, and as you can tell, with a pretty terrible cry. Like trolls in all manner of mythical stories, it's a loud, terrifying beast that only the most clever and resourceful of humans are fit to survive an encounter with. Next, consider the set of sounds here. Okay, so for those of you who aren't professional troll hunters, perhaps that clip sounded a little bit more familiar. That's the sound of a trolling motor propelling a fishing boat. I occasionally went fishing with my grandfather when I was young, and though it's been quite a few years, I can tell you this. A trolling motor is a relatively quiet sort of motor, and trolling is a particular kind of fishing where you use that motor to keep the boat moving slowly while dragging your lines behind the boat. As you can tell, at least from an audio angle, it's a bit more peaceful than troll hunting. So far, then, we have on one hand trolls. Giant, mythical creatures who lurk in the shadows waiting to devour unsuspecting humans. On the other hand, we have trolling, a necessarily quiet pastime, a way to kill a few hours by puttering around on the water with a lure hanging out of a meandering boat. This week's episode of Zeugma focuses on another sort of trolling, internet trolling to be specific. As we were putting this week's episode together, I found myself getting curious about the origins of the term in its online sense, though. Internet trolling, if you take Wikipedia's word for it, is the practice of posting inflammatory, extraneous, or off-topic messages in an online community. And it seems like either of the etymologies above could apply here. Are internet trolls taking their cue from dangerous and hungry shadow dwellers, or is internet trolling just a harmless way to pass an afternoon by throwing some rhetorical bait out into the depths of the internet? The trouble is, nobody seems to know. I put the question to Dr. Whitney Phillips, an expert on trolling, and here's what she had to say.
As early as the early mid-90s, you know, you had people citing both, you know, both origins. You know, that it sort of depends actually on how you feel about trolling. That'll typically determine, you know, which etymology you choose to adopt.
To the dictionary obsessed, this ambiguity could seem frustrating. But perhaps, given the vast varieties of trolls and trolling we'll encounter during this episode, it's kind of perfect. Today we'll be tracking, tracing, and talking with trolls, exploring the rhetorical and cultural purposes trolling gets put to in all its potential viciousness and lightheartedness. We'll start by talking more with Whitney Phillips about research she conducted on trolling for her dissertation. Next, we'll talk with two self-confessed trolls about their practices and stories. So keep listening. We promise we'll try not to troll you. In the fall of 2012, a journalist named Adrian Chen set out to unmask a Reddit user who operated under the handle Violent Acres. Chen, who writes for an online news site called Gawker, wanted to reveal the identity of the person responsible for, among other things, moderating a section of Reddit entitled Jailbait, which Chen describes as dedicated to sexualized images of underage girls. Chen succeeded, publishing a long Gawker expose that called Violent Acres the biggest troll on the web. Not surprisingly, the incident generated a lot of attention and conversation on the web. Among those who weighed in was Dr. Whitney Phillips, who published an article in The Atlantic entitled What an Academic Who Wrote Her Dissertation on Trolls Thinks of Violent Acres. Dr. Phillips has a PhD in English from the University of Oregon and specializes in digital culture and folklore. She's currently a lecturer in New York University's Department of Media, Culture, and Communication. In addition to her Atlantic essay, her work has been published in the journal Television and New Media. I talked with Dr. Phillips via Skype last fall.
All right. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I wanted to start off just because I thought it might be helpful for me and our listeners to start with some quick background here. Does internet trolling have any kind of origin story you can walk us through in order to help us think about where and how this practice arose?
Trolling has a great deal of history. Especially in internet years, the term itself can be traced back 20-ish years, which, again, for the internet is essentially a lifetime. The term troll, used as a pejorative, first emerged on Usenet in the 90s, and it was typically something that you would call an irritating person, someone who was disrupting a community or a conversation. It tended to be something that you accused somebody else of being. If they were being annoying, if they were, whatever they were doing that you didn't like, you know, that was a troll, and you didn't like trolls. But it's not just that the term can be traced, backwards. There's a lot of behavioral precedent for what we now recognize as subcultural trolling, and I'll explain what that means in a second. But in the late 1990s and early 2000s, you had really, really similar behaviors on forums like Style Project, the Jen May forums, on Something Awful. Basically trollish behaviors or proto-trolling behaviors that modern trolls, so to speak, would immediately recognize. The difference was that back then, people didn't refer to those behaviors as trolling. The term hadn't taken on a subcultural connotation quite yet. That didn't happen until the mid-2000s, due in part to the ascendancy of 4chan, particularly the B or random board, which was an early hotbed for trolling behaviors. Troll is what the users of that board called themselves. And as the board became more and more infamous and well-known, it kind of took over, it subsumed all of these other behaviors that had been going on for years and years and years. And it was a gesture towards the early Usenet use of the term. So these were people who were engaging behaviors that they knew to be annoying, that they knew to be disruptive, and which they embraced wholeheartedly in a subcultural fashion. So, you know, again, trolling has lots and lots and lots of precedent. It basically has been around in one form or another. Whether or not people actually called those behaviors trolling is a different story, but the basic behaviors have been around as long as the internet has.
I can imagine at least some more traditional scholars who might see internet trolling as sort of too lowbrow or unproductive to deserve attention. So to give you a chance to sort of preempt any skeptics out there, are there any questions or objections that you tend to yourself get trolled with at conferences or in other sorts of contexts?
First, so the idea that trolling is lowbrow and unproductive, sure, yes, lowbrow at times, definitely. But it's far from unproductive, and this is what's so interesting to me about trolling. Trolling subculture, and when I talk about trolling subculture, I'm talking about the strand of trolling to emerge on 4chan in the mid-2000s, where it really coalesced. So they gave rise to, or at the very least had a hand in amplifying, the vast majority of what people now describe as internet culture with memes. And their early influence on that space simply cannot be overstated. And beyond that, trolling has precipitated all kinds of conversations related to online anonymity and harassment and the limitations of free speech online. So to return to your basic question, no, I've actually not encountered the sort of resistance that you describe. In part because, as I just said, trolls are really pervasive online and hugely productive, maybe not in positive directions, of course, but productive in the sense that they make things that other people engage with. Over the years, while I've been doing this research, a lot of troll stuff has really reached a kind of mainstream prominence, and that has been so bizarre to watch because this is all, I mean, the Bee is infamous. It's this infamous space, and so much of the early coverage was explicitly, you know, condemning of everybody who, you know, used the space. And so then to see a lot of this content, like, making its way onto family-friendly sites and in family-friendly spaces has been very surreal, especially in the last couple of years when memes and internet culture really has gone mainstream. Probably the greatest number of people will be familiar with is lolcats.
Mm-hmm.
4chan and the trolls on the Bee board certainly didn't invent, you know, the internet's interest in cats. That also is about as old as the internet. But, you know, they really popularized this form where you have a picture of a cat and then, you know, text above and below. And it's a funny joke. And so then that really caught fire and has become, you know, this kind of safe for work staple on the Cheeseburger Network. But again, it all, you know, it all kind of can be traced back to this very ambiguous troll space. So basically, even if you don't think you know anything about trolls or trolling culture, if you know something about internet culture, you know something about trolls. You just may not know where it comes from.
Yeah, I guess that note might give us a good point of transition to the more specific situation that that surrounded the Atlantic article that you wrote, which was the Gawker journalist's revelation of the identity of Violent Acres. So he was often referred to, as you note in your article, as sort of the biggest troll on the web, sort of like ultimate or paradigmatic example of a troll. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it depends on how you use that term. I mean, the Violent Acres story was interesting to me in a number of ways. And one of those ways was the way that by that point, troll I think this is probably in 2011, there was an interesting shift, especially in mainstream media circles, to sort of go back to the original use of the term. So troll became something that people started accusing others of being, in addition to the self-identifying trolls who, when they say they're a troll, they mean a very specific thing. But then you would have people in the media accusing basically jerks of being trolls. And so now you have this kind of tension between what definition somebody's using when they're using that term. So with the Violent Acres story, initially it wasn't clear to me if Adrian Chen was using that term. It wasn't clear if Violent Acres described himself explicitly as a troll, or if people were calling him that because he was engaging in these terrible behaviors. So I don't know. I mean, do I think of Violent Acres as a troll? As a subcultural troll, the kind of troll that can be kind of linked back to 4chan? No, I don't see any indication of that. But, you know, the term is evolving once again. And so using the second definition, which is actually the older definition of just kind of identifying people who are engaging in disruptive and gross behaviors and calling them a troll, well, then absolutely, he is a troll of the highest order. But what's most interesting, so that sort of linguistic stuff aside, is how Violent Acres started using that term after he was outed. He started, in all of the interviews, the post-article interviews, he kept saying, well, I was just trolling. I was just trolling, implying that he didn't mean any of it, that he was just giving his audience what they wanted. But then in those same interviews, he refused to repudiate what he had done. And even in the Adrian Chen profile, he basically stated that he stood behind everything that he did. So in his case, the term troll seems to be a smokescreen to try and protect himself from being called a simple sexual predator, which ultimately is what I think he is. So the question of where that term fits and whether or not he's the ultimate paradigmatic example, it's very complicated. I think I am more repulsed by his actions as a man than I am interested in how he maybe defined himself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it really blew open more of a mainstream conversation about trolls on the internet. And I think maybe solidified this idea of calling someone a troll when they're engaging in disgusting behaviors. It has muddied the water considerably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that must have just been overwhelming for you as you sort of carried out this project. I mean, with all these different sort of definitions floating around there, whether it's people calling themselves trolls, whether it's people calling others trolls, a lot of scholarly conversations and rhetoric, at least over the last few years, have focused on the extent to which things like sort of understanding and authorial intention can guide the analysis and creation of texts. And so given the anonymity, the pseudonymity, as you said, and wiliness that's prevalent in trolling, it seems like understanding and intention would be especially hard for figuring out sort of in the context that you're working in. So how did you go about making sense of the significance of trolls' comments for your project?
It was very difficult. Eventually, I came to realize that intentions don't matter. They do. I mean, of course, why a troll does what he does is a very interesting question. And if I had access to that information, I would be elated. It would be fantastic. But as you say, you know, we're dealing with anonymity. We're dealing with wiliness. So you don't often have access to that information. But that's okay in a lot of ways, because what a troll actually feels in their heart of hearts, it kind of doesn't matter. What matters is what they do. So even if a troll is, you know, anti-racist and gay-friendly and feminist in real life, and they don't really mean the racist and homophobic and misogynist things they say online, they're still saying them, and people are still impacted by them. So what the troll thinks about what they do, it kind of doesn't matter, because it doesn't impact the effect that those behaviors end up having. I tried to focus on the impact of the behaviors themselves and the ways in which these behaviors provided an analog to or overlapped with any number of mainstream institutions, specifically the media. So I looked at the behaviors, but I didn't just look at the behaviors. I looked at how those behaviors matched up with more mainstream behaviors that people don't tend to have much of a problem with, which is how mainstream media currently operates in the United States. And so being forced to kind of sidestep intentions and motivations allowed me to see larger cultural patterns that probably would have been difficult for me to notice otherwise, if I would have just been focused on intent. What does the troll really mean? You know, that would have redirected my line of inquiry to a place that ultimately wouldn't have been nearly as productive as where I was forced to go.
Hmm. Yeah, so you mentioned sort of linking trolling behaviors up with their broader context, mainstream media, and things like that. At the end of your article, you talk about the importance of examining and critiquing the what you call institutional incubators in and out of which trolls emerge, rather than addressing trolling in isolation. It sounds like, for you, certainly, the more mainstream media would be one of those incubators. Are there any other particular incubators you have in mind here? And what sort of conversations might we need to have about them?
Well, in an article that I recently published, I talk about the role that Fox News, for example, played in the ascendancy of 4chan, specifically early Anonymous. So not Anonymous as we understand them now as being kind of a hacktivist collective for justice, but as it was in the early mid-2000s, where, you know, Anonymous was really about destruction and disruption. And it was, you know, it was in the service of lulls more than anything else. And so I chronicle the ways in which Fox News helped make Anonymous into what it was, that you simply cannot talk about the emergence of Anonymous without talking about the behaviors of Fox News, which continuously amplified what Anonymous was doing and allowed Anonymous to form into the coherent group it eventually became. Well, to the extent you can call it a coherent group, but Fox News basically did a lot of branding for Anonymous. And then the trolls responded by kind of amplifying the media's amplifications and by mirroring, engaging in a kind of grotesque pantomime, as I describe it, precisely the kinds of things that the media was saying about them. So it became this bizarre symbiotic relationship. And trolling culture would not have emerged had it not been for these continuous media interventions. It could not have existed. So Anonymous, especially early Anonymous, owes its very existence to Fox News. In another sort of more macabre vein, you know, you see the same kind of thing, the same kind of relationship between the emergence of memorial page trolling on Facebook and then mainstream media coverage of tragedies, that trolls are condemned for engaging in very similar behaviors to these mainstream media outlets, which then gives the trolls more of a platform, which, you know, draws more people into the trolling fray, which then gives the media more fodder, which gives the trolls more fodder, that they're actually really, both the trolls and mainstream media outlets are really good for each other's respective business. It's just that for trolls, they're not measuring success in terms of advertising revenue and actual dollars, right? The media makes money off of this. Trolls essentially make lulls, but they're both kind of angling for the same sort of outcome. It's just that what that particular outcome is can be measured, you know, in dollar signs for one and in, you know, troll faces for the other. So if you want to talk about trolls, you know, being problematic, and, you know, you have trolls are very problematic, there's no question about that, but they're embedded within these systems that are taken for granted, that are not condemned as being aberrational. They're taken to be sort of natural and necessary. This is just how media operates in this country. So by looking at trolls and seeing how their behaviors match up with these larger institutions, you kind of get a sense of what these institutions are actually doing, which then calls into question the immediate knee-jerk condemnation just of trolls. The trolls are not the only people deserving of condemnation in this conversation, and that's ultimately the argument, the underlying argument of my dissertation and now my book manuscript. One of the roadblocks to doing something significant about trolling is framing trolls as aberrational. Because when you frame trolls as aberrational, you're not making yourself responsible. You're basically repudiating any role that you might be playing in the propagation of these kinds of behaviors. Oh, it's all the trolls. They're the monsters. They're sociopaths. They're the bad guys. And by doing that, by creating that kind of distance, it means that you're no longer in a position to be self-reflexive about what am I doing? How are mainstream behaviors feeding into and amplifying these behaviors? So I think that until people, particularly people in the media, are willing to just drop this us-them rhetoric, until they're willing to really think about the ways that their behaviors are reflected in trolling behaviors and vice versa, you're always going to have trolling, and you're always going to have a place for the trolls to go. So trolls essentially live and are most comfortable where people are the least self-reflective. And that's kind of the state that we find ourselves in now.
As my interview with Dr. Phillips made clear, offering a concise, all-encapsulating definition of trolls and trolling practices is likely an impossible task. If anything, the trolls crept deeper into the shadows during our conversation. Rather than spend the rest of the episode generalizing about trolls, then, we thought we'd talk to a few folks with firsthand experience with trolling. Give them a chance to describe rather than define trolling. First up is a guest who's appeared on our podcast before, Foley, a digital writing and research lab staffer who previously appeared in our episode on procrastination. Zoogma team member Lisa sat down to talk with her last fall.
It's Lisa here, and today we're talking to a troll, a real-life troll.
I'm a real-life internet troll, but not as bad as you might think. I am Marjorie Foley. What do? I'm in grad school. I got my MA a couple of years ago, and now I am working on my PhD, and I study all sorts of crazy, mean people like Anonymous and the Tea Party. I think the Tea Party is meaner than Anonymous, but that's just me. I work on how they manage to form communities and do collective action. I'm a big fan of the social news site Reddit, which is the polite 4chan, if you know anything about 4chan. less weird stuff on there. I read fantasy novels. I do normal stuff. I don't know.
When did you start trolling, and how long have you been doing it? Why do you think you started? These are many questions.
I started as, I don't know. since I got a computer, minor trolling, but I don't think I really started using those tactics for any real or extended or invested purpose until maybe 2 years ago, because one day I just got pissed off at the internet and I was like, nope, I'm not doing it. I'm gonna shut these people down because they were wrong and they were on the internet and I could do that. Mm-hmm. So I would say since I'm 29 now, I got my first computer right before I turned 18. So 10 or 11 years of minor troublemaking. 2 years of desperately
serious
trying to do good troublemaking. Yeah, why I do it is just because I'm so tired of listening to people on the internet. Mm-hmm. When you see the classic examples of trolling, which is what we think of, people just being like, I don't even want to say the words, dropping the N-bomb, calling people fags, in a real way, saying all these mean things to them, or telling women that they're stupid because they're women, or telling women that they should be raped, stuff like this. Like, that stuff pisses me off. But that's the sort of stuff that I can turn a blind eye to, because it's just, you can't do anything with that. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever actually try and stop that kind of trolling? Do you ever try to get those people to maybe rethink what they're putting out there?
A common sort of tactic on the internet is to ignore it, because oftentimes if you ignore it, it will go away. But yes, I have tried to stop somebody doing it before because they were doing it to me. But the way that I did it was I did not engage what they were saying, because one of the rules of anti-trolling is you don't feed the troll. This person was calling me ignorant, and he was calling me poor or something like this, and I really don't know why, because I had said nothing in what I was talking about my education level or my income, because I say I don't leave any identifying information on the internet
about
myself. Part of that whole anonymity thing, because if anybody finds out that I'm writing things and doesn't approve, then I could be in trouble or whatever. This guy was saying something about how I was poor and like I needed a man to do all this stuff for me.
Lord.
And I was just like, oh no, please come save me. You know, just like, shut up. Like, I don't even care. Like, you're not worth my time.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's engaging trolls that way.
Okay. So your best trolling story.
My best trolling story is something I was a little concerned about. You know, talking about in a podcast, because it's a little fraught with other people's ideas about, you know, how we treat other people. But I'm going to, because as some of my colleagues told me, there are really interesting rhetorical things that went on in it, and, you know, it's really not as terrible as it could be. Mm-hmm. So there's that. So my favorite example comes from Reddit. It was in a self-post on Reddit, which is basically just a text post. Somebody tells a story, and other people respond or comment on it, something like this. So the original post was from a young man who had gone to the bar, and in the bar was another young man who had Down syndrome, and the guy with Down syndrome really wanted to tell everybody in the bar what his favorite pickup line was. And the pickup line was, "Hey, baby, do you want to go back to my place and play video games and eat cereal?" And I thought this was the best pickup line of all time, because who wouldn't want to do that? Well, I mean, there are plenty of people who wouldn't, but that sounds like the perfect date to me. So I'd be like, all right, guy, let's go. Like, what kind of cereal you got? Trix, right? Because that sounds delicious. So the original poster, the guy who's telling the story, says that the young man, the man with Down syndrome, was adorable. And so I thought it was adorable, too. If my boyfriend said, do you want to go back to my place and eat cereal and play video games? I'd be like, yeah, baby, you're adorable. Like, that's awesome. But the internet, like, shitstorm that happened following this comment was, I thought, out of control. But this is what happens on the internet, and this is what trolling is, and this is how it happens. So this one poster came on. Actually, a lot of people did, but there was one that I specifically engaged because she wrote so much about it. She said that it was wrong of the original poster to call the man with Down syndrome adorable because it was infantilizing. I was mildly upset by this, because what I sat there and thought was, wait a second. So if a man with Down syndrome can't be adorable because he has Down syndrome, does that mean he can't be adorable? And aren't you basically just taking this so seriously that you're saying that a person who has a mental disability is not the same as another person and can't be just as adorable and just as endearing and have just the same emotions and, you know, and interpersonal interactions as another human being? So it's like, you know,
fully to the rescue.
Fully to the rescue. So I started off, you know, in sort of a general troll fashion of, you know, just questioning this person and talking to them, like, you know, do you really think that this person can't be adorable and all this stuff? And what I eventually got her to say was that she was a home health care worker taking care of a man with the mental age of a 2-year-old. And I just lost my shit laughing. Like, I could not believe, first of all, that she would be in this conversation with me about infantilization and then use this whole idea of a mental age of a 2-year-old without thinking that, like, the whole entire internet wasn't just gonna pounce on her and be like, really? So I thought this was great. And I thought this was my favorite story, because it was at that point that I got to say, look, maybe it's not this guy calling this person adorable that's the problem. Maybe it's you and the entire medical profession treating people like they're 2-year-old. 2-year-olds are like children. That sort of encourages this behavior. And maybe you need to be the one to have change in your profession rather than going on the internet and being pissed off about it. So
what was that feeling? What was the feeling you got once you pointed out to her that she was being hypocritical?
It was awesome, because, like, you know, you go on the internet and when you start doing this, you're so mad, so mad. And when you finally get that anger out and you get it out in a clever way and you trick a person into saying something they never should have said, it's just like all your anger goes away. Yep. And you're like, finally, I fixed this tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of the world, and maybe everything will be okay.
Well, so Foley, if this isn't a common occurrence, this euphoria that you get after getting someone to admit that they had said something wrong, what would be the worst experience then?
So this is definitely not the worst case of trolling that has ever happened on the internet.
But to you personally?
To me, right? I generally try to look away. And that whole situation was actually what followed in separate threads following my favorite trolling situation is actually the worst I've ever had it, because when people start trolling you and you're, like, I was already engaged, so I kept engaging without remembering the rule not to feed the troll. So the worst part of it was not that the trolling itself was clever, not that the other people trolling me were even really doing anything awesome or calling me out on anything. It's just how offensive what they were saying was. Mm-hmm. So there was this guy, basically he decided that I needed to be raped for saying what I said. It's just so nonsensical that I needed to be raped. And this got into, like, this thread went on for a long time, and a lot of people were actually more involved in this thread than the one that was about the original post, talking about how all women have rape fantasies, so all women must want to be raped. And so I come in there, and, like, the only thing I can possibly say to this is, like, my really feeble, not tricky, I'm not even prepared for this, is to say, you know, not all women have rape fantasies, and there's a big difference between having a rape fantasy and wanting to be raped. Do you understand that? And of course, no, the internet, these young men are like, no, I need to rape some bitches, because this is how the internet behaves.
God.
And so it's just awful, because, like, I'm cringing on the inside, because honestly, I've met men like that in real life. I just recently met a guy who was talking to me about his troubles about picking up ladies, and he said, you know, the worst part of trying to date women is that all of them want you to rape them. And I was like, holy, because this is a real thing. And this is why, like, it upsets me so much, and why I thought it was the worst. Because it's real. It's not trolling. This is actually what makes people
believe. How do you address that? Because it seems just exactly so nonsensical.
Right.
How do you get someone to realize that what they're saying makes absolutely no sense?
In some situations, in those situations, like, I feel like personally it would be impossible for me, because I would get so angry about it.
Welcome, dear listeners. My name is Axel Bowman. I have with me Andy Uzendowski.
Hello.
And we have a very special treat for you today. Let me introduce the sage of the internet, Hampton Finger.
I wouldn't go that far, but hello.
Hello, Hampton. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a systems administrator for the University of Texas at Austin Digital Writing and Research Lab. I've been sysadmitting in some case or fashion since 97.
All right, cool. Part of my introduction was going to be that you have characters in massively multiple what are they called?
MMO.
MMOs?
Massively multiplayer online game. So MMOG. MMOG. I play EVE Online.
All right.
I have a pilot in Test Alliance, Please Ignore, which is part of the Honey Badger Coalition. We currently own at least half the South. We troll 24/7.
So what does that even mean, you troll?
Well, to us, it's just creating drama. It's putting out a statement you know to be patently false in order to rile somebody up to react to it. And it's just, that's part of it. And trolling is just saying, oh, well, we're gonna go over and do this, and then actually do something completely different. Kind of poking a beehive with a nest or with a stick. You know, poke, 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 see what comes out.
Okay. The way you describe it, it doesn't sound like something that's inherently connected to the internet, but in some sort of way it seems to be an internet phenomenon.
It's a lot easier on the internet because there's a layer of abstraction from you to the next person, and they are layerly abstracted from the people who are actually engaging in the troll. So your avatar, your account, your persona is, you know, you're playing the metagame with the avatars that are playing the game.
So technology kind of enables that sort of distance and that sort of... Would you say it's a play with identities?
It's a play with identity because if I was to slap Andy, I would humanly feel bad because I would see the reaction, I would see him hurt, and I would damage our relationship to a certain point. Whereas there are certain relationships, especially in EVE Online, where those kind of slaps are playing the game, playing the role, putting him in his proper place, that kind of thing. Okay. And if I slap him and I'm proven right, I win. But in the real social interaction, it causes him real pain. Why should I cause him real pain? I'm not a jerk. But I can be a jerk online because it's easy.
Because
it's a victimless crime.
Oh, so you think there's no victim? You think it's like... I mean, obviously somebody gets at least their feelings hurt potentially, or is there such a thing as a community where, you know, the person who's the butt of the troll, I guess?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Will kind of accept that and play along with the game? And
there is honor in being the whipping boy, you know, or what we refer to as e-honor, you know, the honor in the game. It's like, look, we're making fun of this guy, but he's being a good sport about it, so we'll continue calling him this or whatever, not to be completely specific.
All right, that's very interesting because... a lot of the time when you think of trolling, you think about people just getting online and saying racist, sexist, homophobic things, but that's not what you're talking about, definitely not what you're doing, I suppose.
That's part of it, but that's an abstraction layer too simple.
Mm-hmm.
There are those that do that,
mm-hmm.
and they usually don't find peers that are doing it the way they're doing it. They find people who are like, no, we're not trying to hurt people. We're just being obnoxious because it's fun. Especially when it's mostly being obnoxious to be fun, but people who don't get it or who are offended by it don't like it. It's kind of this dark spiral of we're the in club because we're being totally joking, but being total assholes to the outside observer.
So let me dig into this kind of group dynamics and being the insider and outsider. So in terms of, you talk about, you know, there's an ethics or a kind of code of honor. There's honor in being the whipping boy. But what about the people who don't get it? Is it a way of, you know, maintaining boundaries, maintaining group boundaries online?
Yes, because the people that don't like it, they have culture problems with us and they leave. Because the part of three quarters of being in EVE on in NullSec. NullSec is the no security, there's no police force going to show up. It's you and your friends, and you depend on each other to hold your space and to fight battles and to defend yourselves. If you don't mesh with that culture, you create real problems, not manufactured problems, which are kind of the trolling thing. Real in the reality game and real in the metagame, where the people are actually creating problems and get bitter and try to find people outside of the game.
Physically find them.
Physically find them.
Do things to them?
Yes. It happens, but we haven't had that in Test. Test hasn't been around that long. So Test, we were shepherded in our creation with the Goon Swarm, and then we went south and stood on our own feet and created our own culture. And actually about a year ago, or was it more, the Goons had a cultural revolution.
Okay.
And started shunning all of the silly culture that we as Test hold so dear, like saying M8, mate, or have a 0 and a 7, like a salute.
And how does that tie in with trolling? They were just sort of trying to distance.
It's part of the culture. It's part of the how we talk, and what other people will see as trolling is what we see as just normal interaction.
Right.
And also riling up our competitors, or riling up people who don't get it. Well, you have inside jokes with your friends. These are just bigger and more, we know what's going on. We're not going to tell you that we're laughing at you, but we're creating a situation where we can laugh at you.
I'm curious to know, is there such a thing, you know, trolling is very often done anonymously.
Yes.
But are there people who've sort of kind of built up a certain level of fame just around being a troll?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. We've got one guy in our group. He is a well-known troll, he is the enforcer of right behavior. He always types in all caps, and when he gets on comms, he always yells and screams. He is feared and loved all at the same time. But 90% of the stuff coming out of his mouth is trolling.
Okay, and everybody loves him for it.
Everybody loves him for it.
How about yourself? Has there ever been a situation where, any kind of situation where you actually sort of saw yourself becoming the victim of a troll, and how, what's your sort of strategies for dealing with that?
Yes, I mean, there are several times. Anytime you deal with the Goons, and we used to be friends with the Goons quite a bit. You'll fly into a system and somebody will tell you, hey, this is my system and you can't go mine here, you can't do this. And they were actually trolling because we have all understandings of out in NullSec, this is where you can do, you have the right to do this and this and this. And then somebody would troll you and then you'd go off and find a diplomat. Diplomats are the people that solve a lot of problems. And then the diplomat will sit there and pull you both into a channel and say, you realize he was trolling, right? No. Well, he was. And then we call that being cute. When a noob falls for a troll and actually, you know, follows the rules that the troll puts up, he'll usually get said, oh, you're being cute. And then we'll give him a bunch of ISK to make up for it. ISK is the money in Eve.
Okay.
So.
And the diplomat actually saying, you realize he's trolling.
Right.
So there's, even on the kind of administrative legal level of the play, there's an acknowledgement of trolling, right? So it's within the rules of the game, it's not actually a violation of anything.
No, it isn't. In fact, a lot of people make a lot of ISK scamming people.
Okay.
So they will go in and pull a recruitment scam where they'll say, hey, you want to get in to my corporation, which is in Test Alliance? Yeah, okay. Give me 500 million ISK and I will get you in. You escort them into NullSec, and then they pay the money, and then you cut them off, and then they get shot and die.
All right.
And then they'll go yell at the Game Masters, and the Game Masters will say, read the end user license agreement. That's called playing the game.
All right.
Enjoy. You got trolled into getting yourself destroyed. And there's a lot of external bickering and arguing and trolling back and forth to create drama to make the game interesting.
Have you ever come across a situation where, you know, stuff got taken outside of the game, maybe involved somebody's actual identity or a...
A while back, a gentleman out in the real world put out $1,000 challenge.
Okay.
To destroy Test Alliance. He said, I will give you $1,000 over PayPal if you destroy Test Alliance.
Your team.
And so one of our guys got on the test server. So there are two tests. There are two servers in Eve. There's the real one, where if you die, you're dead and you respawn. And then there's the test server, where all the markets are artificial. So it's a sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
So our guy logs into the test server and turns on Fraps. Fraps is a recording software that most gamers use for either taking screenshots or video captures.
Mm-hmm.
He undocks several multi-billion ISK ships and self-destructs them. And he does this over and over in this video. I forget how long it was. And so it looks like he's free and clear. And then he's forwarded the video of the guy. He got the $1,000. And well, the thing is the guy put this out there, but he was not smart enough to know he was being taken advantage of.
And he was sort of being punished for kind of taking things outside the game too, I guess, right?
Exactly.
For trying to bring real life money and like sort of leverage some sort of power into the game that's not really part of the game, I guess.
Right, exactly. He's playing on people's real world greed.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hampton Finger, ladies and gentlemen.
So where are we as today's episode draws to a close? Since we started with a clip from the movie Troll Hunter, maybe returning to that film can help us tie things up. Throughout that movie, there are various hints that humans are at least somewhat complicit in a recent increase in troll attacks. Yeah, the trolls are ugly, territorial, and downright scary, but there's the suggestion that part of the problem is humans encroaching on their habitat. The movie thus raises questions that also seem appropriate to ask about internet trolling. How responsible are non-trolls for the actions, whether vicious or benign, of internet trolls? In any case, what should we do about it? Should we take Foley's advice and remember not to feed the trolls, to starve them, ignore them until they go away? Or should we turn the critical eye back on ourselves, following Whitney Phillips and examining the mainstream cultural practices that foster trolling? These questions led me to recall one final representation of trolls in popular culture, in an episode of the NBC sitcom Community. In an episode entitled Remedial Chaos Theory, a group of seven friends gather for a housewarming party. Over the course of the episode, we watch seven alternate timelines unfold, each one taking a different course based on which of the friends goes to get pizza. And in almost every timeline, there's a troll, or to be more precise, a troll figurine. The figurine is a malicious housewarming gift given to Troy, one of the party's hosts, by Pierce, Troy's jealous former roommate.
Here, Troy. Happy housewarming.
Oh. Cool. Thanks, Pierce.
Whoa!
What is it?
Look, it's a traditional Norwegian troll. When Troy and I were living together, I had it on display in the hall, you know, outside his bedroom. He seemed very taken with it.
It used to watch me sleep!
The troll's biggest moment comes during what the episode dubs the darkest timeline. When Troy goes to get the pizza, a terrible confluence of objects and events sets off this Rube Goldberg machine of chaos and destruction. In the process, the gift box containing the troll is upset, and Troy returns to find the smirking figurine perched peacefully in the midst of fire, bloodshed, and screaming. Things do not improve, as one character makes clear after the fact.
Pierce got shot in the leg and died. Shirley's a drunk. Annie's locked in a mental ward because her guilt drove her insane. Jeff lost an arm in the fire. Troy lost his larynx because for some dumb reason he tried to destroy a flaming troll doll by eating it.
Clearly you don't understand anything about defeating trolls.
Life has gone to hell.
Forgive me for stretching the analogy like this, but Troy's impulse is an interesting one. Instead of starving the troll, or ignoring it, or just leaving it alone and giving it space, he ingests it, scarfs it down. What might we learn from such an approach to trolls? Is this suggestive of an act of identification? Of dominance? Of self-destruction? Maybe this whole example is just extraneous and off-topic. If so, I hope you'll forgive me. This episode has made the borders separating us from trolls pretty blurry.
And that's all for this episode. This episode was produced by Eric Detweiler. Come visit us at our website, which you can find at zugma.dwrl.utexas.edu. Also follow us on Twitter at Zugma Podcast or like us on Facebook. You can download episodes by subscribing to our Liberated Syndication profile, or you can find us on iTunes. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks when we'll be coming to you from the 2013 Conference on College Composition and Communication from Las Vegas. See you then.